You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Alrighty, I'm Mel Barrett.
I'm Rebecca Lavoie.
Welcome to Something's Off, where something was off with our recording this morning, and we are on our second run of this podcast.
You don't have to tell people that, because they didn't. They
wouldn't
know.
It was my fault. No, it doesn't matter. I mean, like you said, we're going to be more efficient this time because we know what we're saying.
Oh yeah.
You know, as the audience knows, this is unscripted, so we're gonna. It's not really scripted. It's just rehearsed.
As some of them have commented below about our little mistakes that. Clearly.
Yeah, we make some mistakes.
Yeah, we don't bring also giant books of research with us into the studio, which we could, but we don't.
No, we have our little notes files. So right off the top, just want to say again, thank you so much to all of our tippers. You are amazing. You are helping us along. This is a lot of work and we couldn't do it without you.
What's your Venmo, Mel? What's your Venmo?
Oh, right. And this was a request from somebody who only listens to the audio of the podcast. The Venmo is at Mel Barrett Writes, and Writes is W-R-I-T-E-S because I am a writer.
Yeah.
But I'm going to put it on the screen for you all, too. And there's also a QR code that you can click on if you're watching this on the TV or on the computer. And what else do we have going on?
We've got the memberships.
Yeah.
Which we have not. You can become a member of our channel. It's like $2.99 for the lower one. Whatever you want. There's also a higher one. But we haven't decided exactly what we're going to do with them yet. We might do some lives. We might do some chats. All the stuff.
Interviews, maybe.
People do, yes. However, since this is relatively new for us production-wise, we are still figuring out how to make the show. And, you know, if you have suggestions for what you want us to do for memberships, if you become a member, we will take your suggestion quite seriously, I promise.
Yes.
All right.
Yes, we will.
So let's go. Let's talk.
Okay.
Wait, let's do a thing where we tell people what we're going to do at the beginning. Because we know. We're going to talk about new emails related to the Karen Reed Extended Universe. We're going to talk about a quick news item related to the Extended Karen Reed Universe. We're going to talk about our feelings about some stuff about related to the Karen Reed Universe. And then we're going to talk about another case that you have been following that you were going to tell me about related to a lawsuit because of a first grade who brought a gun to school and committed a shooting, first grader.
A 6-year-old kid, yep. And yeah, we're on verdict watch with that one, so it's really interesting. But let's jump into it. So last night, Corey, who is Marbury versus Mad on Twitter.
Corey Hopkins
dropped the MSP, Massachusetts State Police, dropped 300 emails on her yesterday, and she showed us some of them, and they are very interesting. What was the first one that you saw?
The first one I saw, I think, was the short one. I mean, I would have been on like the lookout for these, but the one that really caught my attention that made me go back was when she posted the shortest one, which was an email from Michael Proctor's personal email address, which unfortunately was redacted. I'm just kidding. I would never, ever, ever, ever email anybody wrong. That was a joke. From his personal email address, which was redacted, to his work email address, saying Rule 17 opposition material. And then there were PDFs attached to it. Yeah. Now, Turtle Boy Aiden Carney tweeted back that it was sent, I believe it was December 23rd, 2023. He says it was the same day that he was arrested, whichever day that was, and that Lindsay Gay Taney was served with a subpoena to appear in front of a grand jury. This likely has nothing to do with that, because the people with the open Rule 17 motion were Karen Reed's team. They wanted access to Elizabeth Proctor, Michael Proctor's wife's communications with Jen McCabe, et cetera. Because Jen McCabe, as you remember, had to admit after being caught that she had visited Trooper Proctor's house as a, and but she said it was, quote, social. So the defense wanted to see these communications. He was, he sent from his personal email address to his work email address. Now you might be saying, so what? I send stuff to my Gmail from work all the time. I send it back. Here's the so what. The so what is his personal emails have now become potentially discoverable.
Yes.
In other proceedings, including lots of other cases that he was involved in. I think that we're like, we'll talk about this briefly, but it was up to like 19 at this point. And with the Karen Reed civil case. And when your emails are opened up, it's a whole different thing.
Can you imagine what's in those emails?
His emails will also have, if they're given a whole file, and granted someone might, a taint team might go through it or whatever, but think about what's in your Gmail. Updates from every fucking website I have ever visited, and they're all in like the junk folder, right? Yep. I get communications from, you get everything. You get everything that relates to your whole, like alerts from Facebook, like, you know, all this stuff. And so that would really be something.
Oh yeah, I'm sure he's got some OnlyFans notifications in there. You know?
Maybe, you never know.
He's always looking for nudes, come on.
But you never know.
Yeah, that one, it was so simple and it really blew my mind because I just thought, oh man. Now, here's a question I have that we didn't talk about before, but I'm just thinking about it now. If he was sending it from his personal email to his, he sent it from his personal email to his work email or vice versa?
If he sent it from his personal email to his work email.
Okay. So that doesn't open up any of his other personal emails, just that one email.
No. It shows that there's a potentially a pattern of him doing work with his personal email.
So you think, this is my question. Like I told you last episode, I have 4 or 5 email addresses because they're for all my shows.
Oh, you mean
or
that?
Whatever.
It would be that Gmail address or any.
Specifically.
A smart lawyer would say any personal email address is associated with Michael Proctor.
Yeah, that's the scary part.
That's what they would say. That being said, the veracity of this guy has not been proven. So, you know, if you had an email address that you used, for instance, to set up a sock puppet Twitter account.
Sure. Yeah, that's my point.
You might decide that you don't need to disclose that one because all you've used it for is to set up your sock puppet Twitter account or your sock puppet Reddit handle. Now, listen, I don't know if Michael Proctor had a sock puppet Twitter account or Reddit. I don't know. But could he have? Sure. And if he did, that should also be discoverable because let's see what he's... If he has a sock puppet Twitter account, let's see what he's tweeting. Let's see what he's redditing about.
A Pandora's box of chaos. But that's my point. Like, what if the personal email was just a burner account where he did transfer from, you know, his personal to his work email? But if because of the wording and whatever motion comes forward from this, it could say just any personal email, which at that point, I mean, ugh. God, that's awful.
But keep in mind, discovery in these, I mean, it's very much dependent on the user. That being said, if some of these are criminal cases,
sure,
then judges could order like a dump. Like this happened in a lawsuit. It also could happen in civil cases. This happened in a lawsuit that my workplace had. A guy really didn't like a story and podcast we made, and he's now been arrested by the Fed. So, but he didn't like it. He sued NHPR.
Yep.
NHPR had incredible attorneys who fought back both on First Amendment grounds mostly and then also on other, he had a few different like things that he was suing for, but mostly on First Amendment grounds. And we won. But the process looked like the reporters and editors involved in that story had to basically hand their devices over and they attached it to a black box which like sucked everything out. You know, any Slack messages they had, like noted to keywords, like any Slack messages they had, any whatevers. And then they would, you know, somebody would go through and redact stuff that was unrelated. But it is very difficult to say you don't have something that you have if a judge orders that to be discoverable. It's difficult. It's more difficult than, but granted, this guy's used to lying and getting away with it. So.
Sure. Anyway, I think it's fascinating that one of the most important emails we've already seen is just him opening up even more of himself. You know what I mean? He's going to be, I don't know what's going to happen to him. But one of the other emails that I found interesting, this was another short one, and this was from Colleen Crawford, who was technically a forensic video technician for Norfolk district attorney's
office.
Was it
their office or Canton police? That was always hard for me to understand.
I'm looking at her sign, her
email address,
her signature line.
Yeah.
Colleen M. Crawford, multimedia director / certified forensic video technician, Norfolk County District Attorney's Office.
Okay.
Her email is in there.
Public emails can be public.
Yeah.
Because they are public emails.
This wasn't her personal.
We are paying for those email addresses. We are paying for that server space.
Yeah. So this is between her and Michael Proctor. The subject line is O'Keefe / Canton MVH Washington Street surveillance video footage from 1/29/2022, link enclosed. And Michael Proctor was the first one to email and said, "Hey, Colleen, thanks for the help on this video. Much appreciated." And she said, "My pleasure, Mike." So this was what I'm assuming is the library footage, right?
Could be library footage. Yeah. I don't know this. I mean, I'll admit my ignorance about the streets of Canton, Massachusetts. But we know that library footage was in play. There was an hour of surveillance footage from a library that mysteriously a couple minutes went missing on. Corroborated by the library. They're like, that we didn't send it with 2 minutes missing. There was obviously a lot of missing Canton police footage that made its way in snippets as disclosure during trial too.
Right.
But clearly there was more. Clearly.
And the Sallyport video, which is, we'll
remember,
get into that in a minute.
Crawford was the one who met the defense experts, the guy who flew up from Texas to look at the raw stuff that Judge Cannone ordered he could have. And she was like, "Sorry, nothing here."
Yeah. You know what's really funny? I just realized this. That was the first readathon I did with you when we were talking about this. Yeah.
Fun.
Interesting. This sort of leads into the next email, because this next email is packed full of stuff. And give me just like, bear with me for a second. I want to tell you everybody who's on the chain, and I want to break down what it says. So this email comes from Brian Tully, and it's to Michael Proctor, Yuri Bukenik, Nicholas Guarino, Matthew Dunn, Christopher Moore, David DeChico, Connor Keefe, and Zachary Clark, and then CC'd is John Fanning, who they're all officers, you know, within the Massachusetts State Police. John Fanning was the court officer who reported to Judge Bev that there had been some jury misconduct in the first trial and started up a whole fiery hearing between Bev and Alan Jackson. And we have never really verified that there was any jury misconduct. It was just an allegation.
Oh, it was an allegation. It was
by
an allegation.
Fanning.
There was a lot of suspicion around jury stuff, you know, jury tampering, jury manipulation of who gets picked in the first trial. There's a lot of speculation around that. And Bev Cannone, for the record, was very angry about that speculation.
So angry.
I think that she's being very protective of her court officer staff, which, you know, I understand that. I do understand why she'd be pissed.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that something didn't happen. I'm not saying it did, but it doesn't mean it didn't just because she was mad and defending it. So she took everything in good faith that the Commonwealth threw at her. She took everything in good faith, and she took everything in bad faith that the defense threw at her. So knowing that that was her attitude, I'm not surprised that she'd be so angry about it.
Yeah, but I do think that the theme of these updates is these people who are putting their thumb on the scale, which we talked about.
They're putting their asses on the scale.
They're putting their asses on the scale, and I'm not going to say what I said before because it was gross. But so let me break down what's in this email. So this is Tully emailing all of these MSP officers who are involved in the Karen Reed case. He says, "I spoke with Adam Lally, and reviewed what everyone will testify to. You will each have time to sit down one-on-one to go over specifics, but this is what we talked about."
Yeah.
So this is what you're expected to testify about. Proctor, you are going to testify about CF McCarthy's in the waterfall video, receipts, defendant's alcohol consumption. Nick Guarino is going to testify about Celebrite and the O'Keefe GPS. Yuri is going to testify about clothing from the hospital, CPD Sallyport video, and this is very interesting. In parentheses, it says thumb drive is on your desk, or thumb drives on your desk. Video from Dighton at defendant's parents' house. I will say this again. I find it odd that Yuri had all of those pieces and Michael Proctor had not really.
Well, he wasn't the officer in charge of the investigation, as Yuri would testify.
Please, please.
We all work together as a team. No, there's no lead investigator. That's not a thing.
So the next is Brian Tully is going to testify about CSLI, Canton Library and Temple video, which we were just talking about, Boston Magazine interview, physical evidence from the scene. This gets interesting. And then he says, a couple of things occurred to me that we are missing. And I'm not sure if this is bad wording on his part or if he's just like laying it out there. But a couple of things occurred to me that we are missing. Taillight pieces and hat found on subsequent days and ring at John's house. I will get with Adam, Lally, on those items. Let me know if I'm missing anything.
So now, when he says they're missing it, does he mean that he has missed assigning, testifying about those things to somebody? Or does he mean that like we don't know where that is? It's very hard to tell what he means here.
It is. That's why I'm saying I'm not sure if it's a wording issue. I do find it interesting that he says taillight pieces and hat found on subsequent days.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming he means hat found at the
34 Fairview.
Hat found? No, but when was the hat found? Was it found days later or was it found the day of? I can't remember.
I don't remember. But he says subsequent days. So let's just assume.
Yeah. And then taillight pieces were found weeks later and probably months later. And anyway, so I find that all interesting. You know, Corey Hopkins was saying that if you really want to, like, you know, dig into this email, go back and watch the 3/5/2025 hearing. It was a motions hearing pre-trial for the second trial. It's a very, very fiery hearing. Basically, Alan Jackson gets up to start talking about the motion, and he gets probably two words out, and she starts berating him.
Mr. Jackson.
She says something along the lines of, you know, Mr. Jackson, David Unetti is a Massachusetts lawyer, and he knows the rules, and blah, blah, blah. And Jackson is like, oh, come on, lady. But I did go back and I listened to the readathon from that day. You and Kevin covered it, and it's fiery. That I watched part of the hearing, and I listened to the readathon. I would suggest everybody go back and listen to that hearing and the readathon because there's just so much to unpack. I don't know what it all means right now. You know, when Corey says go back and watch watch the hearing and then dig into this email and see what you think, there's a lot there. I mean, we didn't get the full CF McCarthy and Waterfall videos until the second trial. The clothing from the hospital became hugely important in the second trial because
yes.
Brennan tried to pull one over on the jury with the sweatshirt.
It's not the only reason why it also became hugely important in the second trial.
Tell me why.
Because the lab techs testified you remember the lab tech who testified that she scraped material from the shirt and dumped material from the envelope into the same container. So there's no way to say this whole storyline about pieces of, quote, glass, which would obviously name it, embedded in his shirt. It's not true. There's no photography. There's no photography of it. There's no evidence of it. All it means is that shit in that envelope ended up in another envelope.
Yes.
And who knows where the shit in that envelope came from? I mean, anyone put anything in there, but it could have been shit that was picked up on the floor of the police station. We don't know. Yeah.
That's the thing. They swept the clothes were on the floor. They swept the clothes off the floor and put it in an evidence bag. Right. And who knows where that evidence bag went because their chain of custody is really fucked up. Yeah. But the next thing that's really important is, and this goes in from the first trial to the second trial. So this email was sent during the first trial or before the first trial in April 2024. So when he says, you know, Yuri, you're going to be talking about the Sallyport video, thumb drives are on your desk. I'm sitting here going, is this the point where the video was inverted or was it after Yuri looked at these thumb drives? And then, you know, let me ask you a question. Do you believe that Yuri Bukenik knew that the video was inverted when he testified?
Yes, I do.
Why do you think that?
I do. I think that because when he answered the subsequent question about it, he had like an answer that was a bullshit answer, but it sounded like Yuri Bukenik, what we know about him is that English is like his third language, right?
Right.
So he does have some nuance with his, and by the way, there's nothing wrong with English being somebody's third or fourth language. Like, I think that's actually really commendable that someone's brain can hold multiple languages. I'm not saying he's a dumb guy.
It's that he used it. He used it on the stand to be like, I don't understand what you're saying when you say irony.
He says he didn't understand. It was some basic legal thing that he said he didn't understand.
It was irony.
Yeah, it was something else, though, too, that was real silly. Anyway, what he said on the stand, when asked to explain it after they got caught, was he said, well, it's just like when you look at your face in the mirror and it's backwards. Oh, it's the same thing. And I'm like,
no.
Okay. Did he make that up on the spot? I don't know. But I think he knew it was inverted. Of course he knew. Mm-hmm. He'd been there. Of course he knew.
But
it was inverted.
Let me ask you another question. Do you think Adam Lally knew?
Maybe not. But I don't know. It's hard to know what Adam Lally knew. I don't think Adam Lally knew. Adam Lally is an attorney. Right? I think he's real sus. I think that whole office is real sus.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're used to just slam dunking cases. If they weren't, they wouldn't have Adam Lally prosecuting cases because he's terrible at it.
Yes, he is.
So they're getting cases that have already been slam dunked by cops who have a demonstrated pattern of doing this, right. And they just have to button them up in court. And I think that's what he thought was going to happen here. So he probably took the shit at the same level of face value he always has, even if he has suspected that there's been malfeasance before he got it. What he gets is what he gets. So he may not have even thought about it.
Yeah. I mean, like I said before, this is, Corey says the Sallyport video is her white whale. And I think very much the same about it because, I mean, I think there are so many layers to it. If Uri did know that it was inverted and if everyone else knew it was inverted, but Adam Lally didn't know it was inverted, it's either he was given this piece of video and told this is going to bolster your case because it looks like they're on the opposite side of the vehicle. Mm. They're on the right side of the vehicle.
Right.
And so he's like, great, this is going to help my case. I'm going to go with this. And then when he's caught in that moment, when the defense is like, this thing is inverted.
They never approach that side of the car.
What does Adam Lally do in that moment? Does he go, like, and I'm talking about him as a human being, not as an attorney. Does he go, oh my God, they just fucked me? Or is he going, oh my God, the police did something to this video? Or is he going, I got to figure out why this is the way it is and I got to come up with a good argument for it. Like, what is he thinking in that moment? If he doesn't know about it.
If he doesn't know that it's inverted, he just takes it at face value? This is pure speculation. We might have known about it. But in that moment, I think he's thinking, we have to show now our other videos. Like, this just must be the way the videos come. It must be an honest mistake. If he's a good faith actor at that moment, I'm not saying he was. I'm just saying that's what a lawyer would how a regular lawyer would think about it.
I'm just saying, if I were Adam Lally and I was thinking, okay, I just got to get this case done. Here comes the video. This looks good for us. Okay, moving on, blah, blah, blah. And then in the middle of testimony, you find out that video is inverted. I think my instinct would be like, you all are fucking liars. I'm walking away because they tried to pull one over on him. If he truly didn't know about it, the cops also tried to pull one over on him. That's really fucked up. Anyway.
How many people in that office, prosecutors in that office, wanted to prosecute the second Karen Reed trial? We know from Vanity Fair's reporting that nobody wanted to re-prosecute it, which is why they brought in Mr. Breenan.
Right.
Breenan. Yeah. Yeah.
The other thing that really sticks out to me, and we can move on from this email, but the other thing that sticks out to me in this email is that this is Tully giving a bunch of Massachusetts State Police officers legal advice, kind of, and there's no DA or ADA CC'd on this email. To me, that's just like, I don't know. That's weird.
It is. I mean, this whole thing is fucking weird. The way they work is weird. I think we know that. I mean, one thing that I saw that was really funny was the forwarding of Officer Nicholas Barros from Dighton, who was there when Karen Reed's car was taken and towed away, and them saying, looking with his report, saying that he did an outstanding job of making observations about the scene. I'm like, I 100% agree with that. He also did an outstanding job.
I totally agree with you.
So that was fun. And, you know, one other thing I wanted to talk about was two things. One's really quick, which is that there's new reporting on how many cases are going to be affected potentially by the federal investigation into the Karen Reed case or the federal investigation into the Norfolk County DA's office, which is what I expect, except that's what I think it really was. Right now, that number is 19. And
insane.
We don't know if the federal materials have been distributed to all 19 of these defense lawyers, but we do know that 12 prosecutors in 12 of the cases have asked for the materials to be sealed. So we know at least in 12 of the cases, they likely have these federal materials. There's a lot.
19 cases.
Michael Proctor's taint continues to spread.
It could be people who are actually guilty, but might get off because of it.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Michael Proctor.
Which is how it should be, by the way. That's how it should be.
I understand. I'm not saying that I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that other than if somebody committed murder and they get away with it because of shoddy police you know, investigation. That sucks. But,
right, right. So let's talk about something else. Yeah, I have a big one. My white whale. I appreciate Corey's white whale. My white whale is that, in my opinion, fake-ass cold case on the Cape that Proctor testified he and Kevin Albert were investigating. I believe it was summer of 2022, after John O'Keefe died, obviously, when they went down to the Cape. And then the next day, Kevin Albert, detective with the Canton Police and Brian Albert's brother, texted Proctor and said, you know, did I leave my badge and gun in your car? I'm like, a mess today. I'm paraphrasing, but he did say the thing about the badge and the gun. And then when asked about it on the stand, what were you doing with Kevin Albert? He said, we were investigating a cold case. Now, of course, Kevin Albert and Michael Proctor work for different agencies, and there's a cold case in the Cape, which is neither one of their jurisdiction, although technically state police, I guess the whole state is their jurisdiction, but he's not assigned to that part of the state. Second, Kevin Albert is Brian Albert's brother. He is the brother of a central witness in the case that Michael Proctor is investigating, which is, by the way, what the defense was trying to point out. You're cozy with this family.
Sure.
You're even hanging out with the brother and drinking of the guy whose house it was. And so they came up with this cold case story. Now, the story has not been pursued enough in the media, in my opinion. Agreed. Because these documents are now coming out, because people are asking questions, folks are on it, and I am so grateful. And one of the things that we know is that in the investigation into Kevin Albert, which I think resulted in him getting like 3 days of vacation time taken away or some bullshit, Gallagher, the story is that Gallagher assigned Kevin the case in 2021, which of course, very convenient time to have assigned it to him because it would have placed it before John O'Keefe's death.
Right.
When asked about what the case was in 2023, Helena Rafferty sent a very quick email to the person who asked and said, it's the Mosher case. Interestingly, some very smart people have figured out that a case with the last name Mosher, I believe it's Michael Mosher, was entered into the National Database of Missing People in 2023. Yeah. Okay. Which, by the way, that's not necessarily on its own. If you just said to me, hey, a missing persons case just popped up, but it's a 40-year-old case because the person went missing in 1980, that's not uncommon because NamUs was created like in 2004, 2005 or something like that. So there's still cases are still being put in. And this is one of the reasons why we don't really know how many people in the United States are missing. So that on its face. But input at that time, I believe this cold case investigation, it's my opinion, which has always been a lie, told to cover up the fact that Kevin Albert and Michael Proctor actually drove to the Cape to talk to Brian Higgins, who, as we know, ghosted the Albert family and the McAlberts right after John O'Keefe died, like never spoke to them again. I believe this was a visit either under the guise of an investigating a case or something. And Kevin Albert was brought along because he's Brian Albert's brother. And I believe that it's potentially that, and I'm not alone in believing that. So first of all, I just want to thank the people in the world, you know, amateur sleuths, journalists, everybody who's finally on this, because this is not unimportant, this whole thing. Whatever they went to the Cape to do is not unimportant. And the fact that, you know, Ted Daniel saying like he did this story about the GPS being turned off, once again put this trip into focus. And I'm like, thank fucking God. And by the way, quick correction, folks have told us after our last episode that Proctor and Buchanick took Buchanick's personal vehicle over to Karen Reed's parents' house to confiscate her car. So thank you for that correction. But yeah, so what do you think? What do you think of this trip? Do you think it's a fake ass? And by the way, Mosher, the only case that folks on the internet can find to match up with it was a case from 1980. That's what it says in the thing. But a guy named Mosher, who fits the age, died in 2010 on the Cape. So I'm not saying it's the same person. They may have just made up the name Mosher, pulled it from the ether, or pulled it from pop culture or football or something. But no one can seem to figure out what this case is, whether or not it's a fully made up case, whether or not they're backdating a cold case that they were able to find online and pretending as if they were working that. Thoughts?
I have a lot of questions. So one of my first questions is, has anyone spoken on the record with the Mosher family?
I don't know that a mainstream outlet has. I mean, there's been no reporting on it yet, but we don't know that means because that they haven't spoken to them.
To me, if if Proctor and Kevin Albert are going to Sandwich to investigate this cold case, they're going to go interview some people, you would think.
Yeah, you'd think so. You'd think there'd be
so
notes.
So who are the people where that they the interviewed and where are their notes? That's my first couple of questions. My second question is, what does Canton Police Department have to do with Sandwich, Massachusetts?
Well, the story is that they were sent articles and that they it was requested that they look into it by, I think, a member of the family, and that they were sent articles about it. Now, if they were, it's a matter of public record. Show us those correspondence from the Mosher family. Show us the correspondence sending the articles. That's all discoverable. I mean, that's all FOIA-able. So that's what they're saying.
But what does Canton have to do with Sandwich?
As of now, unless he was last seen in Canton or had been seen in Canton before he went missing, which has not been said by anybody, they wouldn't have anything to do with it. But
because either they're either dumb or they just don't care the way it looks that a witness in a case's brother is going with the lead investigator on that case in a car together to go to the Cape to investigate a cold case, supposedly, that has nothing to do with Canton.
State police working with the FBI, that happens, you know, if things have crossed state lines and so forth. State police working with local police.
I'm not questioning Proctor.
No, it could happen if there's a murder and they can't handle it or whatever. Like they, but also, this police department allegedly recused itself from the case that he is investigating.
Yes.
So even time alone together does not look fantastic. Like the whole thing. So one of the things I wanted to mention from a previous episode is that we were talking about Good and his assertion that he sent Jen McCabe to wake up the Alberts because she'd, quote, be a friendly face.
Right.
I got a couple of inbound messages on the video itself, and then also somebody wrote to me saying that the reason why he would have done that is because everybody was scared of this family. That, like, they wouldn't want to be the ones
to
tell him, why is there a dead body on your lawn? And it wasn't because they were trying to be nice. It was because they were like, how about you go do it?
Yeah.
And so I just want to mention that. So Kevin Albert is likely, you know, he's, I don't think it's unfair to say he's muscle for the Alberts. I mean, isn't
absolutely.
He? I mean, it's like, He was still working detective in that town, and he's also the brother thing is the important thing. The fact that he's the brother, he's Colin Albert's uncle. Like, this is the shit that matters.
Yes, so. And Michael Proctor, the lead investigator, is sitting in a cruiser with a guy who grew up in that home. That's the family home where John O'Keefe was found dead. He shouldn't be in the same car with that guy.
No.
And he shouldn't be sitting in the car for the 2 hours it's going to take them to get to the Cape with all the traffic. And he shouldn't be going out drinking with Kevin Albert.
Nope.
And they shouldn't be driving their cruiser drunk. But
that on its face alone should have been grounds to fire Kevin Albert, in my opinion.
That was part of the reason why Proctor was let. That's what they said anyway. Part of the reason why he was let go is because he was drinking on the job. So
one of the things I've learned through a story that my news outlet is just putting a podcast out called Operation Nightcat. You should check it out.
Oh, I've heard that.
Is that texts alone are not enough generally, because you need to corroborate that communication, because, you know, the defense could be, we were just fucking around. You know, it's like, if you can't, so, you know, going to those, like, the investigation into those places, I mean, they looked at his, they asked for his bank records. So they did have corroboration that drinks had been purchased or whatever. You know, I think that's, in my opinion, I know that there's different, another union, I know there's different levels of offenses. This one probably didn't rise to whatever technical level it would take to fire somebody. But in my opinion, it should be at a legal level to fire somebody. So
yeah, you shouldn't be driving around drunk in your cruiser and, oh, I can't. But yeah, I would love to figure out this Mosher story. I'd love to see who they talk to. So maybe I'll dig into it a little bit. Maybe I think
my
that,
white whale.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Good to know. Did you have any other updates for Karen Reed stuff?
No. Let's move on to the case that you want to tell me about.
Well, wait. Before we move on.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus. If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
There's one little tidbit. Yannetti was on Billy Bush's show yesterday, and Billy Bush gave Yannetti the award of sexiest man alive. And I thought you'd appreciate that because I know how you love Yannetti.
100% deserved.
Of all of them. His mom and sister were involved somehow.
Of all of them, if I had to play like F, marry, kill,
yeah,
I would F him and marry him, that guy.
Really?
I love that
guy.
Is
it his bald head? What is it?
Maybe.
He's a nice guy.
I have a type. My type is straight bear. He sort of fits into that type without the facial hair. He has that sort of gentleness to him that I really like. He's whip smart.
Straight bear.
He does a really good job threading the needle with people that helped in the Karen Reed case. He does a really good job acknowledging and giving Turtle Boy the credit he does without being like, I agree that that person's a C word, just like he said, or whatever. Like, he does a very good job threading that needle and being measured. He's been very discreet about whatever's gone on post trial with this legal team, which seems to have broken up. Of course, he and Alessi, I think, are tight. But he's just discreet. He's lovely. He's smart. He's measured. I would 100% hire him as my attorney. I'm kind of joking with the F and M thing, although I'm kind of not. If my back was up against the wall and I had to marry one of them.
Is that really what you just said?
It would be him.
Okay.
I'll just leave it there. I didn't write a song about a redwood tree with him in it or anything like that.
But I do love the bromance between him and Alessi, and that they're gym buddies. And they pack lunches for each other throughout the trial. That was real cute.
Yeah.
Okay.
He is the sexiest man alive. So just in my opinion. Sorry, Kevin.
I even think that he's sexy, and I'm a lesbian. So
you are?
Did I not tell you that? I probably should have told you that before we started.
God damn it. I can't associate with you.
Look at me. Gay people have to come out every day of their lives.
Okay, so there is a case you wanted to tell me about.
Okay.
What is
so
that
case? So we are on verdict watch. This is something I've been sort of paying attention to in the periphery, and it came to me through one of our listeners, Kristen Shimpy, who has written a blog about it. Let me just say the name of the blog because I think that's important.
Let's give her credit.
Yeah.
If you can link to it in the notes.
I will. She writes a blog that's called The Thoughtful Mom, which I really appreciate. And she told me about the story and asked us to cover it. And I had a chance to get through everything. The trial was, I think it was almost 2 weeks long, maybe like a week and a half long. They just did closing arguments yesterday. So we are on verdict watch. I will say this is a civil trial, and the civil trial for some reason is happening before a criminal trial in this case.
So I'm just saying, is there going to be a criminal trial in this case? I know there already was one. Is there going to be another
from
one?
What I'm hearing, there is going to be. And I will
Is it a
get
mental
into
capacity?
It
it's a mental capacity issue, I'm guessing.
I don't know the details of it, but I can tell you that something major happens in this civil trial that happened yesterday that will deal with the criminal trial. And this case was on the verge of being dismissed because of things that might happen in the criminal trial.
Okay.
So January 6, 2023, this is the first day back to school after the winter break holiday. This takes place in Virginia in Newport News at Richneck Elementary School. Between 8:30 and 10:30, students are arriving at school. The student that we're talking about in this case, we're going to call him JT. That's what they call him in the civil trial. He is 6 years old. He is a first grader in Abigail Zwerner's first grade class.
Yep.
He arrives at 10:30 because he is on a sort of modified schedule because he's had some behavioral problems. And most recently, one of his behavioral problems was that he sort of went off on Abby Zwerner grabbed her phone out of her hands and smashed it on the ground. And for that, he was actually suspended. So this is the first day he's back from break and suspension. So he was on suspension before they went to break. So between 8:30 and 10:30, you know, all the kids are coming into school, blah, blah, blah. 10:30 to 11 a.m., there is a teacher comes to Ebony Parker, who is the assistant principal on duty that day, and says, hey, I think that JT brought a gun to school. So a couple of teachers alert her at this point. And she says, so they're like, we need to search his backpack because that's where they're saying the gun is. She says, no, don't search his backpack. His mother's on the way. Wait for his mother to arrive before you search his backpack.
Now, just to point out, for those who are thinking that that was a sound decision, I don't know why she made that decision. A school has every right to search a student's belongings, clothing, locker, and that's the result of a Supreme Court case called TILO, which is a very interesting New Jersey case about locker searches. But anyway, so check that out. Check that case out if you're curious as to why I am so adamant that on school property, kids have no expectation of personal privacy. I mean, I'm not saying that I think it's amazing that they don't, but I'm saying that that's the law.
Well, and like, let's just to sidebar for a second here. Let's think about the fact that this is a 6-year-old child. Yeah. They're chaos in a little tiny body as it is. Their brains are like,
what are they worried about?
I'm going to do this. Like, they have no idea if this kid has a gun or if he doesn't have a gun. We both have dogs. You guys all know that. So Rebecca's dogs are probably barking.
They're going apeshit because I think our cleaner has just showed up. So anyway,
it's fine.
So we'll have vacuuming.
This is real life. It's real life. I have a dog behind me. Okay. My point is that this is a 6-year-old child. You have no idea what this kid is going to do. He doesn't even know what he's going to do next. And if there is a gun, if there is a weapon in a backpack, like think about it in the world, if there was a weapon in a backpack at the airport, you would be pulled aside and searched. Mm-hmm. A 6-year-old child with all the gun violence we have in schools in this country, you should have searched his backpack. Now, I understand that basically what the defense is saying in this case is that there was nobody could imagine that a 6-year-old had a gun, right?
Really?
Okay, I understand
because
that.
There haven't been any other shootings related. There have been.
Yeah. So, but at 11:30-ish, the backpack is actually searched. Because the teacher who reported it to the AP, she was like, I'm not sure if it was a man or a woman or they, but they were like, I'm sorry, I'm not listening to you. I'm going to go ahead and search the backpack. And at that point, no gun was found. But it was later believed, and I'll get to this in a minute, that the kid had taken the gun out of his bag and put it in his pocket. And at this point, at 11:30 a.m., Ebony Parker, the assistant principal, refused to escalate. So she would not go into lockdown. There was no police contact. And the child was not removed from the class. He was left with his backpack in the class.
Like, they weren't like, go sit in the nurse's office or go sit in the counselor's office.
That's the least you could do. Yeah, have him go sit somewhere else, right? Okay, so 12 to 12:30, another student says that he saw the boy with the gun. Another teacher warns Parker. She allegedly responds, the boy has pockets small enough to hide a gun? Meaning, question mark?
He doesn't, right. Yeah.
Yeah. 1 o'clock, the boy, JT, attempts to take an object from the backpack. So staff observes behavior consistent with him hiding something. Now, keep in mind, the teacher who he had already sort of accosted, Zwerner,
by smashing her phone,
has already.
This kid obviously has a lot of issues.
He does, and that's okay, but it needs to be treated with in a mental health capacity, and he needs to be protected from himself, and he needs to be protected, you know, from
schools.
Other people.
By the way, will fight that because if he, for instance, if it's decided that he needed to go to a therapeutic school or some sort of school with extra support, the district would be responsible for, and at least this is how it works where I live, the district is responsible for paying of a placement out of a district if they can't handle whatever's going on with the kids. So if you have an IEP or whatever in a special school would be better, like they will fight you on that shit. Like they'll fight.
I don't know how it works in Virginia, but if anyone in the audience is from Virginia or understands the situation, please let me know. I would really like to understand this. And I'll have another question later about workers' comp. But anyway, so 1 o'clock, staff observes, you know, him acting weird. And I want to make a point. Zwerner had already gone to the assistant principal and said, hey, JT's acting really, you know, kind of off again today. I'm really uncomfortable with his behavior. And again, they did nothing.
Are you aware of whether or not the school counselor was ever brought into this? Is it ever mentioned?
Not that I've seen in the reporting, but it may be. I mean, again, I'm newer to this case.
Yeah, that's fine.
But these are the only details that I'm aware of. So if somebody wants to correct me, great. 1:30 to 1:45, a student tells a teacher that the boy, JT, showed him the gun. And the teacher goes and alerts the office again. No search, no security response, no police at this point.
Wow.
So at around 2 p.m., in Zwirner's first grade classroom, JT pulls the gun out of his pocket and he points it at her, and she puts her hand against her chest. To block it or something like that.
He probably shoots, just like, oh my God, maybe.
Right. He shoots, hits her hand. The bullet goes through her hand into her chest and lodges right next to her aorta. And the kid, JT, says, I shot that bitch. He fired one round. Allegedly.
Yeah.
And then at that point, Zwirner even shielded the students in her class and got every single kid out of that classroom. She was the last person to leave that classroom with a bullet in her chest.
Wow.
Around just after 2 o'clock, 2:02, the school finally calls 911 because they all heard this, you know, shot being fired. Officers get there within a couple of minutes. She's rushed to the hospital. 2:05, the JT is detained by school officers and the gun is recovered at the scene. Zwirner undergoes emergency surgery, and then it's followed by multiple other surgeries. She's got bullet fragments that still remain in her body that can't be removed because they're near vital structures. And she goes home. Her sister has to move in with her because she can't even, like, go to the bathroom on her own, take a shower, feed herself, do anything like that. So, you know, at this point, the questions that I have for the folks in Virginia about workers' comp, that from what I'm understanding, she turned down a workers' comp claim in order to go the civil route, right? The mother of the child was arrested. She was charged in state and federal court, and she was convicted. And I think she's serving somewhere between 2 and 5 years.
Okay. For making the gun available to the son.
Yeah. And then the principal and I believe one of the other administrators was let go. I believe also that Ebony Parker was let go. But now where we are is that Abby is suing Parker in civil court for $40 million.
Just Parker or the school district?
From what I understand, the initial lawsuit, the original civil lawsuit, named the school board, assistant principal Ebony Parker, and superintendent George Parker. But the school board and the assistant principal were dismissed from the case. So the current status is that the civil case is ongoing while the criminal trial for George Parker, the superintendent, is scheduled for.
Wait, his name's Parker too?
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
Why is he has a criminal trial? He's a superintendent with a criminal trial? Interesting.
George Parker is being criminally prosecuted for felony child abuse.
I see. So then... The lawsuit, though, is based on the assistant principal's actions, I'm guessing.
Yes,
negligence.
Yes.
And then for the folks who've never had kids in school or don't understand the system, the school is like the principal and the school create systems that everybody's supposed to abide by. And so what this lawsuit is sort of implying is that the school is negligent because this employee who should have known better and didn't know better because of the school system did this thing. So, I have to say that I'm completely shocked by the lack of action taken, even though I think I suspect its source. I could be completely off base.
But what is the source?
My daughter is an elementary school teacher. She was a classroom teacher, and now she does English language learning teaching. She has told me that this is the culture, very much so, not so much so in her school, but in the other school she used to work for. They're terrified of parents in schools. There has been a culture shift where parents actually, people should know, it's actually non-parents who have actually pushed this parents' rights stuff from behind the scenes. And then parents come and they've gotten on board, and then they go to, I need to have control of what my kid is doing every day. There should be cameras in classrooms and whatever, whatever. They work for us. That has completely shifted the culture inside of schools to one now where parents are to be feared because parents sue. parents, you know, there's a lawsuit right now in the town next to mine with a parent suing, you know, and it's like they're afraid of litigation. That being said, they have a duty to protect every child in that school and their own employees. Yes. And the employees, I'm assuming, have a contract. I assume the teachers have a contract. I don't know what the if she's in a union, what they think about this. But the school was derelict, in my opinion, in its duty to protect all of the kids. And it should stem from this one person's actions. And if it were me, I'd probably engage in this lawsuit as well.
Well, I can tell you that the defense's expert, who is a national administrator and studies this, she got up on the stand and she said that Ebony Parker had no duty to protect Zwirner. And that they can't escalate.
What about the other kids, though? Like, I mean, granted, the other kids aren't suing. They could, though, because the trauma inflicted by this. You know what I mean?
This expert, I was just like, I wouldn't want my kid to be in any school that this woman was an administrator for. Because she literally was like, listen, if we escalated every threat, we would never be able to get through a school day. She literally said that. I mean, that's not word for word. That's me paraphrasing. But she was like, if we escalated every single threat, we wouldn't be able to even have school.
I don't know what to say to that. I mean,
I don't either.
My son was suspended when he was in high school because he used to go to flea markets and he collected vintage Swiss Army knives.
Yeah.
And he had one in his backpack at school and he got suspended immediately because another kid saw it in his bag. And I had to take him to the fucking police station to talk to the cops.
Yeah.
Like, this is the reason why schools have metal detectors. This is the reason why schools have school resource officers. And I'm not saying this school has either one of those things, but this is why the elementary school in my tiny town of 6,000 people, where there haven't been any shootings or incidents, they just completely redid the elementary school to take student safety into account. This is a foreground issue. This is not a background unlikely to happen issue anymore.
No.
That is wild to me that an expert would say that. Is this a jury trial or a bench trial? Do you know?
It's a jury trial. So here's the, this is the thing. So they went through, they had a lot of stops and starts, but they got through closing arguments yesterday. I thought the closing arguments were pretty strong. The defense attorney she kept doing this weird thing where throughout the entire closing argument she kept saying, you know, this is my job. I have to tell you this. She said this is my job probably 15 times. And it was because she was breaking down Abigail's character. But another really interesting thing happened. And I can't remember if it happened in the rebuttal closing from the plaintiff. But at some point, the plaintiff's attorney brought up the fact that Ebony Parker didn't testify. And that she was basically getting rid of her rights in this case is kind of the way he put it, right? So closing arguments are finished. They send
the
jury out.
She was the proctor of this case.
Yeah. They send the jury out to deliberate. Immediately, the defense gets up and says, Judge, we are asking you to dismiss this case. And it's because the plaintiff's attorney just, you know, tainted the jury by telling the jury that she wasn't testifying because she couldn't defend herself. And he said, you know, that's not true, because the reason she's not testifying is that she has to take her Fifth Amendment right.
That's right.
Because she's going to have to testify in this criminal trial and she can't incriminate herself.
Right.
And the judge was like, yeah, you're right. Then the plaintiff's attorney got up and was arguing back and forth with the judge. And the judge was like, why'd you even bring this up? You know better. Like, unfortunately, what's happened now, the defense has asked for a curative instruction to the jury, which the judge is going to do because the other option is to dismiss the case. He doesn't want to declare a mistrial because of basically attorney misconduct. So what he's doing is he's going to give a curative instruction to the jury. But the issue now is if the jury decides, and I think the jury will decide in Abby Zwirner's favor. I don't know for how much, if it's going to be the $40 million.
It's appealable.
Regardless, it's appealable.
Well, it's going to, totally. I mean, everything is appealable. Let's be fair. But it sounds like it grounds for a decent appeal.
Yes.
So
that's where we are right now. We're on verdict watch. Yep.
Well, I'm interested to see how that goes. Keep me in the loop.
I will. And then I think there are going to probably be some more updates on Kelsey Fitzsimmons, too. I heard peripherally that the SJC
the Supreme Judicial Court, yeah,
is going to hear her appeal.
Yeah.
About bail.
Or that her appeal can continue. So the so that's really interesting. I'm also just going to tell people again, follow Marbury v. Mad on Twitter or go to Reddit, Justice for John O'Keefe subreddit, to see all of the things that she's posting. They just get reposted there. There's going to be a lot of news in the coming days.
I think so, too. There's so much going on right now. Yeah. Look at us. We're just sitting on the mic here again. We'll probably have to come back and record in the next few days, I am sure, because something's going to happen. I think that Corey is going to release some information that is going to be pretty big.
Yeah. She already has. She's going to continue to do so. She's amazing.
I know.
She doesn't like boys.
All right. So
any more than I do.
We did it. We did it for a second time. I'm proud of us. And I appreciate you. I appreciate the audience. And I'm going to wait to read out our tippers until we have a longer list from the last one that I read. But that'll be coming in the next couple of episodes. And again,
there's incentive for you to donate to this Venmo handle right here. Mel Barrett writes, because we'll read your name on the podcast.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, we'll read your name on the podcast.
It's like a romper room, the magic mirror.
Yeah. I think we just aged ourselves.
It's all right.
All right. Have a good rest of your day. And this will be out on Friday. And we actually might have a verdict tomorrow. So if we do, I will at least do a posted update. I don't know if I'll do a video, but I'll do a posted update.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Mel.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Rebecca.